The hawker dug in his heels.
Now hold on there. I agreed to tell you, and I can do that. Like I said, though, it's hard to find. But I can't be expected to give up my business to go off as a guide. It's a number of days I'd be away from an income.
Scowling, Oba leaned down. And how much is it you want to guide me there? The man took a heavy breath as he considered, muttering to himself as if toiling at tallying up numbers in his head.
Well, sir,
he said at last, lifting a finger on his free hand that stuck up through a short stub of a knit glove.
I guess I could be gone for a few days if I were to be paid a gold mark.
Oba laughed. I'm not giving you a mark, gold or even silver, for the work of guiding me for a few days. I'd be willing to pay you another silver penny, but that's all. Take it or give me back my first silver penny and be gone. The hawker shook his head as he mumbled to himself. Finally, he squinted up at Oba with a look of resignation.
My charms aren't selling well of late. To tell the truth, I could use the money. You have the best of me again, sir. I'll guide you then for a silver penny.
Oba released the man's wrist. Let's go.
It's across the Azrith Plains. We'll need horses.
Now you want me to buy you a horse? Are you out of your mind?
Well, walking is no good, but I know folks here who will give you a good deal on a couple of horses. If we treat the animals right, I'm sure they'd agree to buy them back once we return, less a small fee for their use.
Oba thought it over. He wanted to go up into the palace to have a look around, but he thought it best if he visited Lethea's sister first. There were things to learn.
That sounds fair.
Oba gave the hunched hawker a nod. Let's go get some horses and be off then. They moved out of the quieter side route into a main road thick with milling throngs. There were a number of attractive women about. Some of them looked Oba's way, the invitation and longing clear in their eyes. They met his gaze, hungry for him. Oba gave them smiles, a token suggesting the possibility of more later. He could see that even that much thrilled them. It occurred to him, though, that these women roaming the markets were probably lowly peasants. Up in the palace were likely to be the kind of women Oba wanted to meet, women of station. He deserved no less. After all, he was a Rawl, practically a prince, or something comparable. Maybe even something more than that.
"What's your name, anyway?"
Oba asked, seeing as we'll be traveling together.
"Clovis."
Oba didn't offer his name. He liked being called Sir. It was, after all, only fitting.
With all the people,
Oba said as his gaze swept the crowds, how is it that your charms aren't selling? Why is it that you're having hard times? The man sighed in apparent misery.
It's a sad tale, but it's not your burden, sir.
Simple enough question, I think.
I suppose it is.
He shielded his eyes from the sunlight with a hand, partly covered in a knitted fingerless glove, as he peered up at Oba.
Well, sir, a time ago, back in the thick of winter, I met a beautiful young woman.
Oba looked over at the hunched, wrinkled, disheveled man shuffling along beside him.
Met her? Well, sir, truth be told, I was offering her a charm.
Clovis's brow twisted curiously, as if he'd suddenly come across something quite unexpected.
It was her eyes that seized you, big blue eyes, blue like you rarely see.
Clovis ogled up at Oba.
The thing is, sir, her eyes looked very much like yours.
It was Oba's turn to frown. Like mine? Clovis nodded earnestly.
They did, sir. She had eyes like yours. Imagine that. Something about her, about you as well. That looks somehow familiar. Can't say as I know what it is, though.
What does this have to do with your hard times? Did you give her all your money and fail to get between her legs? Clovis seemed shocked by the very notion.
No, sir, nothing like that. I tried to sell her a charm. so she would have good fortune. Instead, she stole all my money."
Oba grunted skeptically. "I bet she was batting her eyelashes and smiling at you while she had her arm in your pocket to her elbow, and you were too eager to suspect what she was really doing."
"Nothing like that, sir. Nothing like that at all."
His voice turned bitter.
"She set a man upon me, and he took it all for her. He did it. But it was at her word, I'm sure of it. The two of them stole all my money, robbed me of everything I had earned all year."
Something tickled Oba's memory. He scanned his mental lists of odd and unrelated things. Some of those things began to come together.
"What did this woman with the blue eyes look like?"
"Oh, she was beautiful, sir, with thick ringlets of red hair."
Even if this woman had robbed the man of his savings, the distant look in his eye told Oba that he was still clearly taken by her.
"Her face was like a vision of a good spirit, it was, and her figure was enough to take your breath away. But I should have known by that bewitchingly evil red hair that there was something more devious to her than her beauty."
Oba halted and seized the man by the arm.
"Was her name Jensen?"
Clovis offered only a regretful shrug.
"Sorry, sir, she never gave me her name. But I don't imagine there are many women that look like that, not with those blue eyes, her exquisite looks, and those ringlets of red hair."
Oba didn't think so either. The description fit Jensen perfectly. Well, wasn't that just something?
Clovis pointed. "There, sir. Down there is the man who can sell us horses."
Chapter 36. Oba squinted into the gloom under the thick vegetation. It was hard to believe how dark it was in under the towering trees down at the bottom of the crooked spine of rock when it had been such a bright sunny morning up in the meadow above. It looked wet ahead, too. He turned from the way leading in under the vines and hanging trailers of moss to look back up the steep rocky incline toward where he had left Clovis by a warm fire, watching their horses and gear. Oba was glad to finally be free of the jumpy little man. He was wearing, like a pesky fly buzzing around all the time. All the way across the Azrith Plains, the man jabbered on and on at length about everything and nothing. Oba would have rather been rid of the hawker and gone alone, but the man had been right about how difficult it would have been to have found this place down into the back of Althea's swamp. At least the man had no intention of going into the swamp with Oba. Clovis had seemed nervous and edgy about making sure that his customer went in, though. He was probably worried that Oba wouldn't believe him and was eager to prove himself. He waited at the top, watching, shooing with hands covered in tattered, fingerless gloves, impatient for Oba to go in and see he was being given his money's worth. Oba sighed and started out again, slogging ahead through the underbrush, stooping beneath low branches. He tiptoed across roots where he could and waded through standing water where he had to. The air was still and as stagnant as the water. It felt wet, too, besides smelling foul. Strange birds called from far off through the trees back in the shadows where light probably never reached, back beyond vines, thick clumps of leaves and rotting trunks leaning drunkenly against stalwart companions. Creatures moved through the water, too. What they could be, fish or reptile or conjured beast, there was no telling. Oba didn't like the place, not one bit. He reminded himself that there would be a myriad of new things to learn once he got to Althea's place. Not even that cheered him. He thought about the strange bugs and weasels and salamanders he'd seen so far, and the ones he was likely yet to see. That, too, failed to cheer him. He still didn't like the place. Ducking under branches, he swept spiderwebs aside. The fattest spider he'd ever encountered fell to the ground and darted for a hiding place. Oba, quicker yet, squashed it good. Hairy legs clawed the air in death before going still. Oba grinned as he moved on. He was beginning to like the place better. His nose wrinkled. The farther in he went, the worse it smelled, reeking with a strange, pungent, dank rot.
He saw steam rising off through the trees, and began to detect an odor something like rotten eggs, but more acidic. Oba was beginning not to like the place again. He plowed onward, unsure if it had been a good idea to go see Althea, especially by the route suggested by the hand-wringing hawker. Oba sighed as he slogged through thick brush. The sooner he got in and had a chat with Althea, the sooner he could be out of the disgusting place. Besides, the voice had stirred, restless that he continue. The sooner he was finished with Lethea's sister, the sooner he could visit his ancestral home, the People's Palace. It would be wise to learn what he could first, so that he might know what to anticipate from his half-brother. Oba wondered if Jensen had been to see Althea yet, and if she had, what she had found out. Oba was more and more convinced that his fate was somehow linked to the Jensen woman. Too many things kept leading back to her for it to be a meaningless connection. Oba was very careful about how things on the lists he'd kept connected. Other people weren't so observant, but they didn't have to be. They weren't important. Both he and Jensen were a hole in the world. Possibly even more interesting, they both had something in their eyes that Clovis had noticed. What it was exactly, the man wasn't sure. Oba had pressed him, but he couldn't say. As the morning wore on, Oba made the best time he could along the twisted tangle of roots that passed for a path, until it sank lower ahead of him into an expanse of still, dark water. Oba paused, panting, sweat streaming down his face, checking to the sides, searching for another way across to where the ground looked to rise up again. It appeared that the way ahead tunneled on through the thick, steamy growth, but first he had to get across the water. Hot as he was, that didn't sound half bad. He saw no vines hanging down that might steady him, so he quickly cut a stout limb and stripped it of its branches to make himself a staff to help him balance as he crossed the low place. Staff in hand, Oba waded out into a stretch of water. It wasn't as much of a cooling relief as he had hoped. It smelled awful and was full of brown leeches. As he moved through the water, trailing a wake that dislodged debris from the banks, he had to keep brushing the clouds of biting bugs from his face. He kept checking, but unless he backtracked to look for another way, he saw that it was the only way to dry land beyond. That thought alone convinced him to keep going. There were roots enough under the surface for footing, but Oba soon found himself in up to his chest, and he wasn't yet to the middle. As deep as it was, the water made him buoyant, which meant his footing wasn't as good. The roots at the bottom were slippery and poor support for the staff, but at least helped him keep his balance. He was a good swimmer, but he didn't like the thought of what else might be swimming with him, and preferred to keep on his feet. Almost to the far bank, Oba was just about to discard the staff and swim the rest of the way to wash the sweat off, when something heavy brushed against his leg. Before he could think what to do about it, the thing bumped him hard enough to push him from his feet, dumping him into the water. As soon as he plunged into the deeper water, the thing enveloped his legs. He instantly thought of the monsters that were said to dwell in the swamp. Throughout their long ride, Clovis had regaled him with stories of the beasts, warning him to be careful, but Oba had scoffed, confident in his own strength. Now, Oba cried out in fright of the monster that had him. He struggled frantically in gasping panic, trying to shake his legs free, but the fire-breathing beast had him fast and wouldn't let go. It reminded him of being locked in the pen when he was little, trapped and helpless. Oba's cry echoed out across the frothing water, returning threefold from the darkness beyond. The only clear thought that came to him was that he was too young to die, especially in so awful a fashion. He had so much ahead of him to live for. It wasn't fair that this should happen to him. He cried out again as he splashed and fought to escape. He wanted away, just as he had wanted out of the terrible trapped feeling of being locked in the pen. His screams never helped then, and they didn't help now. Their echo was empty companionship. The thing suddenly and forcefully twisted him around, spinning him and dragged him under. Oba gasped a breath just in time. As he went under, eyes wide in fright, he saw for the first time the scales of his captor. It was the biggest snake he had ever seen. But he was also struck with relief because it was still a snake. It might be big, but it was just an animal, not a fire-breathing monster. Before his arm could be pinned, Oba snatched the knife in a sheath at his belt and yanked it free. He knew that in water it would be difficult to use the same force as on dry land. Still, stabbing the thing would be his only chance, and he had to do it before he drowned. With his neck stretching for air, but the life-giving surface getting farther and farther away as the weight around him continued to drag him deeper, his feet unexpectedly found something solid. Rather than continue to fight to reach the surface for air, he let his legs bend as he sank. When his legs were folded like a bullfrog ready to spring, he tensed his powerful leg muscles and pushed with a mighty shove off the bottom. Oba exploded from the water, coils of snake wrapped around him. He landed on his side, halfway out of the water, up on twisted roots. The snake, its body cushioning Oba's weight when they crashed to the ground, clearly didn't appreciate it. Iridescent green scales shimmered in the weak light as the reeking water sluiced from both combatants. The snake's head rose over Oba's shoulder. Yellow eyes peered at him through a dark mask. A red tongue flicked out, feeling along its troublesome prey. Oba grinned. "Come closer, my pretty friend." The snake undulated along his body as the eyes fixed him with a menacing stare. If a snake could get angry, this one was. Lightning quick, Oba snatched the thing behind the dark green head, gripping it in his brawny fist. It reminded him of the wrestling he had done before on rare occasions. He liked wrestling. Oba never lost at wrestling. The snake paused to hiss. With powerful muscles, each held back the other. The snake tried to enfold Oba in yet more coils and gain the advantage by constricting. It was a mighty struggle of strength as each tried to wrestle the other into submission. Oba recalled that ever since he had listened to the voice, he had been invincible. He remembered how his life used to be ruled by fear, fear of his mother, fear of the powerful sorceress. Most everyone feared the sorceress, just as most everyone feared snakes. Except Oba had stood up to her dangerous magic. She had sent fire and lightning at him, magic able to blast its way through walls and vanquish any opposition, yet he had been invincible. What was a lowly snake in the face of that kind of opponent? He felt a bit chagrined that he had cried out in fright. What had he, Oba Rall, to fear? Least of all from a mere snake. Oba rolled farther up onto solid ground, taking the snake with him. He grinned as he brought the knife up under the scaled jaw. The huge animal went still. With deliberate care, gripping the thing behind the head with one hand, Oba pressed the blade upward with the other. The tough scales, like pale white armor, resisted penetration. The snake, now under threat from Oba's deadly blade, suddenly began struggling, not to dominate, this time, but to escape. Muscular coils unwrapped from Oba's legs, sweeping across the ground, trying for purchase against roots and saplings, searching for anything to latch onto. With his foot, Oba pulled a length of the shimmering green body back toward him, preventing any escape. The razor-sharp blade, with Oba's powerful muscles pushing it, suddenly popped through the thick scales under the jaw. Oba watched, fascinated, as blood ran down his fist. The snake went wild with fear and pain. Any thoughts of conquest were long forgotten. Now it wanted desperately to get away. The animal put all its considerable strength to that effort alone. But Oba was strong. Nothing ever escaped him. Straining with the effort, he dragged the twisting, turning, writhing body up onto higher, drier ground. He grunted as he lifted the heavy beast. Holding it aloft, screaming with fury, Oba ran forward. With a mighty lunge, he drove his knife into a tree, pinning the snake there with the blade through its lower jaw and roof of its mouth, like a long third fang. The snake's yellow eyes watched, helpless, as Oba drew yet another knife from his boot. He wanted to see the life go out of those wicked yellow eyes as they watched him. Oba made a slit in the pale underbody, in the fold between rows of scales, not a long slit, not a slit that would kill, just a slit big enough for his hand. Oba grinned. "Are you ready?" he asked the thing. It watched, unable to do anything else. Oba pushed his sleeve up his arm as far as he could, then wormed his hand in through the slit. It was a tight fit, but he wriggled his hand, then his wrist, then his arm into the living body, farther and farther, as the snake whipped side to side, not just in its futile effort to escape, but now in agony. With a knee, Oba pinned the body to the trunk of the tree, and with a foot held down the thrashing tail. For Oba, the world seemed to vanish around him as he felt what it was like to be a snake. He imagined he was becoming the animal, in its living body, feeling its skin around his own as he pushed his arm in. He felt its warm, wet insides compressed around his flesh. He slithered his hand in deeper. He had to stand closer so that he could get his arm down in farther, until his eyes were only inches from the snake's. Looking into those eyes, he was wildly exhilarated at seeing not just brutal pain, but the most marvelous terror. Oba felt his destination pulsing through the slippery viscera. Then he found it, the living heart. It beat furiously in his hand, throbbing and jumping. As they gazed deeply into each other's eyes, Oba squeezed with his powerful fingers. In a thick, warm, wet gush, the heart burst. The snake thrashed with the sudden, wild strength of death. But as Oba held the quivering, burst heart, each of the snake's movements became progressively more labored, more sluggish, until with one last rolling flip of its tail, it went still. The whole time, Oba stared into the yellow eyes until he knew they were dead. It wasn't the same as watching a person die, because it lacked that singular connection of human identity. There were no complex human thoughts with which he could relate, but it was still thrilling to see death enter the living. He was liking the swamp better all the time. Victorious and blood-soaked, Oba squatted at the water's edge, washing himself and his knives clean. The entire encounter had been unexpected, rousing, and satisfying, although he had to admit that it was nowhere near as exciting with a snake as it was with a woman. With a woman, there was the thrill of sex added into the experience, the thrill of having more than his hand inside her as death entered her, too, to share her body with him. There could be no greater intimacy than that. It was sacred. The dark water was turned red by the time Oba had finished. The color made him think of Jensen's red hair. As he straightened, he checked to make sure he had all his belongings and hadn't lost anything in the struggle. He patted his pocket for the reassuring presence of his hard-earned wealth. His money purse wasn't there. In cold panic, he thrust his hand in his pocket, but the purse was gone. He realized that he had to have lost it in the water while struggling with the snake. He kept the purse on the end of a thong he tied to a belt loop so as to be sure it was safe and couldn't be accidentally lost. He didn't see how it was possible, but the knot in the leather thong must have come loose in the struggle. He turned a scowl on the dead thing slumped in a heap at the base of the tree. In a screaming rage, Oba lifted the snake by the throat and pounded the lifeless head against the tree until the scales started sloughing off. Panting and drained from the effort, Oba finally halted. He let the bloody mass slip to the ground. Despondent, he decided he would have to dive back into the water and search for his missing money. Before he did, he made one last despairing check of his pocket. Looking closer, he saw then that leather thong he kept tied to his belt loop was still there. It hadn't come undone after all. He pulled the short length of leather out in his fingers. It had been cut. Oba turned, looking back at the way he had come. Clovis. Clovis was always pushing up close, yammering away like a pesky fly buzzing around him. When Oba had bought the horses, Clovis had seen the money purse. With a growl, Oba glared back through the swamp. A light rain had begun to fall, making but a whisper against the living canopy of leaves. The drops felt cool on his heated face. He would kill the little thief. Slowly. Clovis would no doubt feign innocence. He would beg to be searched to prove he didn't have the missing money purse. Oba figured the man would likely have buried the money somewhere, intending to come back later and retrieve it. Oba would make him confess. There was no doubt in his mind about that. Clovis thought he was clever, but he had not met the likes of Oba Rawl before. Striking out back through the swamp to wring the hawker's neck, Oba didn't get far before he stopped. No, it had taken him a good long time to get this far. He had to be close to Althea's by now. He couldn't let his anger rule him. He had to think. He was smart, smarter than his mother, smarter than Lathea the sorceress, and smarter than a scrawny little thief. He would act out of deliberate intent, not out of blind anger. He could deal with Clovis when he was finished with Althea. In a dark mood, Oba started out again toward the sorceress. Chapter 37. Watching from a distance through the slow fall of rain, Oba didn't see anyone outside the cedar log house that lay beyond the tangled undergrowth and trees. There had been tracks, the boot prints of a man, around the shore of a small lake. The tracks weren't fresh, but they had led Oba up a path to the house. Smoke from the chimney curled lazily in the stagnant, humid air. The house up ahead, almost hidden under trailers of moss and vines, had to be the home of the sorceress. No one else would be fool enough to live in such a miserable place. Oba crept lightly on the balls of his feet, up the back steps, up onto the narrow porch. Around in front, columns made of thick logs supported a low, overhanging roof. Out beyond the wide front steps lay a broad path, no doubt the way visitors timidly approached the sorceress for a telling. In the grip of rage and well beyond any pretense of being polite enough to knock, Oba threw open the door. A small fire burned in the hearth. With only the fire and two little windows, the place was rather dimly lit. The walls were covered with fussy carvings, mostly of animals, some plain, some painted, and some gilded. It was hardly the way Oba chose to carve animals. The furnishings were better than any he had ever grown up with, but not nearly as nice as he had become accustomed to. Near the hearth, a woman with big dark eyes sat in an elaborately carved chair, the finest of the furnishings, like a queen on her throne, quietly watching him over the rim of a cup as she sipped. Even though her long golden hair was different, and she didn't have that hauntingly austere cast to her face, Oba still recognized her features. Looking into those eyes, there could be no doubt. It was Lathea's sister. Eyes. That was something on one of the mental lists he kept. "I am Althea," she said, taking a cup away from her lips. Her voice wasn't at all like her sister's. It conveyed a sense of authority, as did Lathea's voice, yet it didn't have the haughty ring that went with it. She didn't rise. "I'm afraid you've arrived much sooner than I expected." Seeking to quickly nullify any potential threat, Oba ignored her and hurried to the rooms at the rear, checking first the room where he saw a workbench. Clovis had told him that Althea had a husband, Friedrich, and, of course, there had been a man's boot prints outside. Chisels, knives, and mallets were laid out in an orderly fashion. Each could be a deadly weapon in the right hands. The place had the tidy look of work put up for a time. "My husband is gone to the palace," she called from her chair by the fire. "We're alone." He checked for himself anyway, looking in the bedroom, and found it empty. She was telling the truth. But for the rain on the roof, the place was quiet. The two of them were indeed alone. Finally confident that they would not be disturbed, he returned to the main room. Without a smile, without a frown, without worry, she watched him coming toward her. Oba thought that if she had any brains, she should at least be worried. If anything, she looked resigned or maybe sleepy. A swamp, with its heavy, humid air, could certainly make a person drowsy. Not far from her chair, on the floor, off to the side, rested a square board with an elaborate gilded symbol on it. It reminded him of something on one of his lists of things. A pile of small, smooth, dark stones sat to the side on the board. A large red and gold pillow lay near her feet. Oba paused, suddenly realizing the connection between one of the things on his lists and the gilded symbol on the board. The symbol reminded him of the dried base of a mountain fever rose, one of the herbs Lethea used to put in his cures. Most of Lethea's herbs were already ground up, but that one never was. She would crush a single one of the dried flowers only just before she added it to his cure. Such an ominous conjunction could only be a warning sign of danger. He had been right. This sorceress was the threat he had been concerned she might be. Fists flexing at his side, Oba towered over the woman as he glared down at her. "Dear spirits," she whispered to herself, "I thought that I would never again have to stare up into those eyes."
"What eyes?"
"Darken Rawl's eyes," she said. Her voice carried a thread of some distant quality, maybe regret, maybe hopelessness, maybe even terror.
"Darken Rawl's eyes," a grin stole onto Oba's face. "That's very generous of you to mention."
Not a trace of a smile visited her. It was not a compliment. Oba's smile curdled. He was only mildly surprised that she knew he was Darken Rawl's son. She was a sorceress, after all. She was also Lethea's sister. Who knew what that troublesome woman might have tattled from her eternal place in the world of the dead?
"You're the one who killed Lethea."
Her words were not so much question as condemnation. While Oba felt confident, because he was invincible, he remained wary. Though he had feared the sorceress Lethea his whole life, she had in the end turned out to be less formidable than he had reckoned. But Lethea was not the equal of this woman, not by any means. Rather than answer her accusation, Oba asked a question of his own. "What's a hole in the world?" She smiled a private smile, then held a hand out. "Won't you sit and have some tea with me?" Oba guessed that he had the time. He would have his way with this woman, he was sure of that. There was no rush to be done with it. In a way, he regretted having rushed right into it with Lethea before he'd thought to get answers to everything first. Done was done, he always said. Althea, though, would answer all his questions. He would take his time and be sure of it. She would teach him many new things before they were finished. Such long-anticipated gratification should be savored, not rushed. He cautiously sank into the chair. A pot sat on the simple little table between the two chairs, but there was no second cup. "Oh, I'm sorry," she said when she noticed his eyes searching and realized the omission. "Please go to the cupboard over there and get a cup."
"You're the hostess of this tea party. Why don't you go get it for me?"
The woman's slender fingers traced the spiral curves at the end of the chair's arms. "I'm afraid that I'm a cripple. I can't walk. I'm only able to drag my useless legs around the house and do a few simple things for myself." Oba stared at her, not knowing if he believed her. She was sweating profusely, a sure sign of something. She was sure to be terrified in the presence of the man powerful enough to do away with her sorceress sister. Maybe she was trying to distract him, hoping to make a run for it as soon as he turned his back. Althea took her skirt between forefingers and thumbs, and lifted the hem in a dainty manner, allowing him to see her knees and a little higher. He leaned over for a look. Her legs were mangled and withered. They looked like they had died ages ago and had not been buried. Oba found the sight fascinating. Althea lifted an eyebrow.
"Crippled, as I said."
"How?"
"Your father's work."
"Well, wasn't that just something?"
For the first time, Oba felt a very tangible connection to his father. He had had a difficult and trying morning and was entitled to a leisurely cup of tea. In fact, he found the notion provocative. What he had in mind for her would be thirsty work. Oba crossed the room and retrieved the biggest cup from among the collection he found on a shelf. When he set the cup down, she poured it full of a dark, thick tea. "Special tea," she explained when she noticed the frown on his face. "It can be terribly uncomfortable here in the swamp, what with the heat and humidity. This helps clear the head, too, after the onus of a morning's difficult tasks. Among other things, it will sweat the weariness from tired muscles, such as from a long walk." His head was pounding after his tough morning. Although his clothes were finally dry after his swim and the blood had all been washed off, he wondered if she could somehow sense the difficult time he'd had. There was no telling what this woman could do, but he wasn't worried. He was invincible, as Lathea's end had proved. "Your tea will help all that?"
"Oh, yes, it's very powerful tonic. It will cure many problems, you'll see for yourself."
Oba saw that she was drinking the same thick tea. She was sweating, sure, so he figured she was right about that. She downed the rest of her cupful and poured herself another. She held her cup up in a toast.
"To sweet life while we have it."
Oba thought it an odd toast. It sounded almost as if she was admitting that she knew she was about to die.
"To life," Oba said, lifting his cup to tap against hers. "While we have it."
Oba took a gulp of the dark tea. He grimaced at recognizing the taste. It was what the symbol on the board represented, the mountain fever rose. He had learned to identify the bitter taste from the times when Lathea crushed one and added it to his cure.
"Drink up," his companion said. Her breathing seemed labored. She took a few long swallows. "As I said, it will solve a lot of problems."
She drained the rest in her cup. He knew that Lathea, despite her mean streak, sometimes mixed up cures to help sick people. While he'd waited on her to make cures for him and his mother, he had seen her crush up a mountain fever rose in many a concoction she mixed for others. Now Althea was downing it by the cupful, so she obviously had faith in the distasteful herb, too. Such heavy humidity always gave Oba a headache. Despite the bitter taste, he took another sip, hoping it would help his sore muscles in addition to clearing his head.
"I have some questions."
"You mentioned that," Althea said, peering at him from over the rim of her cup. "And you expect me to provide answers."
"That's right."
Oba took another swallow of the heavy tea. He grimaced again. He didn't know why the woman called it tea. There was no tea about it. It was just ground, dried mountain fever rose in a little hot water. Her dark-eyed gaze followed as he set the big cup on the table. The wind had picked up, beating the rain in against the window. Oba guessed he'd made it to her house just in time. Foul swamp. He turned his attention back to the sorceress.
"I want to know what a hole in the world is. Your sister said that you could see holes in the world."
"Did she now?"
"I don't know why she would say such a thing."
"Oh, I had to convince her," Oba said. "Am I going to have to convince you, too?" He hoped so. He tingled with the anticipation of getting to the blade work. But he was in no rush. He had time. He enjoyed playing games with the living. It helped him understand how they thought, so that when the time came and he looked into their eyes, he was better able to imagine what they were thinking as death hovered close. Althea tilted her head in gesture to the table between them.
"The tea won't help if you don't have enough. Drink up."
Oba waved off her concern and leaned closer on an elbow.
"I've traveled a long way. Answer my question."
Althea finally looked away from his glare and used her arms to lower her weight from her chair down onto the floor.
It was quite a struggle. Oba didn't offer to help. It fascinated him to watch people struggle. The sorceress pulled herself to the red and gold pillow, dragging her useless legs behind. She worked herself into a sitting position and folded her dead legs up before herself. It was difficult, but she managed with precise and efficient moves that looked well practiced. All the effort puzzled him. "Why don't you use your magic?" She peered up at him with those big dark eyes so filled with silent condemnation. "Your father did the same to my magic as he did to my legs." Oba was stunned. He wondered if his father had been invincible too. Perhaps Oba had always been meant to be his father's true heir. Perhaps fate had finally stepped in and rescued Oba for better things. "You mean you're a sorceress, but you can't do magic?" As distant thunder rumbled through the swamp, she gestured to a place on the floor. While Oba sat down before her, she dragged over the board with the gilded symbol and placed it between them. "I was left with only a partial ability to foretell things," she said. "Nothing else. If you wished to, you could strangle me with one hand while finishing your tea with the other. I could do nothing to stop you." Oba thought that might take some of the fun out of it. Struggle was part of any genuinely satisfying encounter. How much could a crippled old woman struggle? At least there was still the terror, the agony, the witnessing death's arrival to look forward to. "But you can still do prophecy? That was how you knew I was coming?" "In a way," she sighed heavily, as if the effort of pulling herself to her red and gold pillow had left her exhausted. As she turned her attention to the board before her, she seemed to shrug off her weariness. "I want to show you something." She was speaking now like a confidant. "It may finally explain some things for you." He leaned forward expectantly, pleased that she had at last wisely decided to reveal secrets. Oba liked to learn new things. He watched as she sorted through her little pile of stones. She inspected several carefully before she found the one she wanted. She set the others to the side, apparently in some order she understood, though he thought they all looked the same. She turned back to him and lifted the single stone up before his eyes. "You," she said.
"Me? What do you mean?"
"This stone represents you."
"Why?"
"It chose to."
"You mean that you decided it would represent me?"
"No, I mean that the stone decided to represent you, or rather, that which controls the stones decided."
"What controls the stones?"
He was surprised to see a smile spread on Althea's face. It grew to a dangerous grin. Not even Lathea had ever managed a look as chillingly malevolent.
"Magic decides," she hissed.
Oba had to remind himself that he was invincible. He gestured, trying to look unconcerned.
"What about the others? Who are they then?"
"I thought you wanted to learn about yourself, not others." She leaned toward him with a countenance of supreme self-confidence. "Other people don't really matter to you, do they now?"
Oba glared at her private smile. "I guess not."
She rattled the single stone in her loose fist. Without looking away from his eyes, she cast the stone down at the board. Lightning flickered. The stone tumbled across the board, rolling to a stop out beyond the outer gilded circle. Thunder rumbled in the distance.
"So," he asked, "what does it mean?"
Rather than answer, and without looking down, she scooped up the stone. Her gaze didn't move off his face as she rattled his stone again. Again, and without a word, she cast it at the board. Lightning flashed. Amazingly, the stone came to rest in the same place as it had the first time, not just close to the same place, but in the exact same place. Rain drummed against the roof as a stutter of thunder crackled through the swamp. Althea quickly swept up the stone and cast it a third time, again accompanied by a flash of lightning, only this time the lightning was closer. Oba licked his lips. as he waited for the fall of the stone that represented him. Goosebumps ran up his arms as he saw the dark little stone roll to a stop in the same place on the board as it had the two previous times. The instant it had halted, thunder boomed. Oba put his hands on his knees and leaned back. "Some trick."
"Not a trick," she said. "Magic."
"I thought you couldn't do magic."
"I can't."
"Then how are you doing that?"
"I told you I'm not doing it. The stones are doing it themselves."
"Well then, what's it supposed to mean about me when it stops there in that place?"
He realized that somewhere during the stone rolling, her smile had gone away.
One graceful finger lit by the firelight pointed down to where his stone lay.
"That place represents the underworld," she said in a grim voice. "The world of the dead."
Oba tried to look only mildly interested. "What does that have to do with me?"
Her big dark eyes wouldn't stop boring into his soul. "That's where the voice comes from, Oba."
Goosebumps flitted up his arms. "How do you know my name?"
She cocked her head, casting half her face in deep shadow. "I made a mistake once long ago."
"What mistake?"
"I helped save your life, helped your mother get you away from the palace before Dark and Rawl could find out that you existed and kill you."
"Liar!"
Oba snatched up the stone from the board.
"I'm his son. Why would he want to kill me?"
She hadn't taken her penetrating gaze from him.
"Maybe because he knew you would listen to the voices, Oba."
Oba wanted to cut out her terrible eyes. He would cut them out. He thought it best, though, if he found out more first, if he gathered his courage first.
"You were a friend of my mother?"
"No, I didn't really know her. Lathea knew her better. Your mother was but one young woman among several who were in trouble and a great deal of danger. I helped them, that's all. For that, Dark and Rawl crippled me. If you choose not to believe the truth about his intentions toward you, then I leave it to you to please yourself with a different answer of your own devising."
Oba considered her words, checking them for any connection they might have to anything on his lists. He didn't find any links right off.
"You and Lathea helped the children of Dark and Rawl?" "My sister Lathea and I were at one time very close. We were both committed, each in our own way, to helping those in need. But she came to resent those like you, offspring of Lord Rawl, because of the agony it caused me to have tried to help. She could not bring herself to witness my punishment and pain. She left. It was a weakness on her part, but I knew she could not help having such feelings. I loved her, so I would not beg her to visit me here like this, despite how terribly I missed her. I never saw her again. It was the only kindness I could do her, let her run away. I would imagine she did not look kindly upon you. She had her reasons, even if they were misdirected."
Oba was not about to be talked into any sympathy for that hateful woman. He inspected the dark stone for a time, then gave it back to Althea.
"Those three were just luck. Do it again."
"You wouldn't believe me if I did it 100 times. She handed the stone back. "You do it. Cast it yourself."
Oba defiantly rattled the stone in his loose fist, as he had seen her do. She leaned back against her chair as she watched him. Her eyes were getting droopy. Oba threw the stone down at the board with enough force to be certain that it would roll well beyond the board and prove her wrong. As the stone left his hand, lightning flashed so hard that he flinched and looked up, fearing it was blasting through the roof.